Welcome one and all once again to Dueled in episode 43. Almost close to agent, what is it, agent 44? Is that
seven.
His name? 47. So four more episodes until we hit his mark, and I actually don't think I'll be around for that one, so we'll see. Joining us this week we have Daniel.
Greetings, mortals.
And borrowing him or selling him because we're short people this week, we have Dylan from the Nerds on the Rocks podcast and the Comic Anvil.
Hello, everyone.
And now you get to know how I feel when I pull triple duties on the site and I'm on a podcast.
I've done this once before with you, I think.
Yeah, you have. But I mean, now you have two because you're on two permanent podcasts on the sites now. So there's that. So, yeah, I mean, it's not much to talk about this week because, you know, the games industry is gearing up for GamesCon next week, and then weekend after that, I think, is PAX Prime. So.
And then after that, I have Eurogamer, and it's going to be the greatest thing ever because I get to play the greatest game ever made. And then after that, every game ever comes out. Either that or every game ever gets delayed to next year.
I was also going to point out that we also still have TGS. So as a summer for video games is pretty bad, but much like the video game industry, we hold all of our main things for the fall, even our press events. So yeah, there's four video game shows within the next like 6 weeks or so. And, I mean, news is expected as usual, so we'll see how that goes. But let's start from the beginning. What have we been playing recently? And since he hasn't been on the show, or he's been on the show once, Dylan, what are you playing these days?
Well, since we did the Metroid podcast, I've been playing a lot of Metroid games. Specifically Other M and Zero Mission and Pinball. And I was also playing Spider-Man Web of Shadows, because I was planning to buy the Spider-Man game that came out last year. I haven't gotten around to that yet, but I beat that Web of Shadows again. Got all the endings finally. It's a pretty fun game.
How many endings are there?
There's four. Two for each suit.
Huh, interesting.
Yep.
Okay. We already discussed Metroid, but how are you enjoying Other M? Nothing?
I probably won't go back to it now that we've done the episode.
Fair enough. Daniel, what about you? What have you been playing?
I've been getting into Torchlight. It's one of the, I sort of played for about an hour and thought, and then I started playing it again in the last week, and I actually really like it now. It's a shame that I just put it down like the first time. It's a nice little cartoony action RPG, Diablo style, and it's a bit easy. I think I went wrong somewhere and leveled up a few too many times, which is why it's easy for me. But it's still fun, and I'm not normally a fan of the games that are just the same thing over and over and over again, which is basically what these action RPGs are. But I know Torchlight has like a certain charm to it. So that's all I've been playing, really.
Okay, are you playing the PC? It's on Xbox Live Arcade, right? Or am I mistaken in that regard?
Yeah, it's on Xbox Live. I've got the PC copy.
Okay.
No, it's on Xbox Live.
Okay. And joining us in progress, we have Adrian. Or is he not
set up
yet? There we go.
Hold on, just a second.
Okay. So, while he sets up, I might as well share that I bought the 3DS this past week because it was $170 at Target before the Ambassador's Program expiration date.
Oh.
So I wanted in on the 20 free games.
You jammy.
Nice.
So, yes, I bought that and I got into the Ambassador Program, I hope. They said there's going to be some way to confirm it, but I did it like Wednesday, which is way ahead of the time I have to schedule. As we've noted on this podcast before, there are really not that many games out for the 3DS. So this is probably the first console I can think of in history I've ever bought without buying a game with it. part of it was because I bought it at Target, and they were unaware of the fact that they dropped the price of it. So they had to scan it like 15 times to make sure that it was actually $170 because they didn't believe their own machine.
And I think that's the way across the planet at the minute. It was, I think for the retailers, the price drop was a bit sudden. Nobody expected it.
But I mean, they were giving like a 2 weeks notice, but it was that Target, that corporate devil dropped it because Walmart ended up dropping the price like Tuesday, so they wanted to compete, so they dropped it Wednesday when the official price drop didn't begin until Friday. So when they saw that it was $170, I guess I was the first person who bought it at that price, they were surprised.
Yeah.
And after they finished scanning it so many times, I didn't feel like getting off the line to go pick up a game, so I didn't end up buying anything. I ended up buying Link's Awakening when I got home just so I can have something to play, and it's been enjoyable. I will say that I'm a fan of the games that are included on it.
The R games are awesome.
Yes, they're pretty fun. It's comparable to Wii Sports, but they're not as... I don't know. I guess it's different when it's kind of hidden on the system. You get cards and stuff, but it's kind of, you know, like Wii Sports, you got a disc, so people tried that out.
Yeah.
Here, it's...
You've got to turn it on and actually use it and find out where they are.
And there's a bit of a setup for it, and because, you know, you have a certain range of the cards and stuff. But once you actually do set it up, it's actually a pretty nice, you know, it's a decent time waste. It's kind of cool. It shows off the features of the system, you know, the 3D, the augmented reality and stuff like that. So those are pretty fun. Okay, so yeah, I enjoy Face Raiders because of how it transforms, you know, like your own space, room, outside becomes your environment. And the game transforms it as you, you know, say in different types of faces, I guess, attack you and stuff like that. So that's kind of cool. The Face Raider game and the AR games included are a good time waste. I don't think there are any type of system seller, but if you own the system...
Well, then I think they're there for just, like, say, this is what people can do with the technology that we've got instead of a specific game on their own.
Well, yeah, but I mean, it's kind of good. It could have been the equivalent of Wii Sports because, I mean, I have Wii Sports as a combined game, but it's hard to say that Wii Sports is really more than like a fancy tech demo bundled together. So it's kind of the same concept. There's also other games, but I haven't really got around to using the Street Pass yet. I haven't met anybody or any Miis, I should say. So I haven't done that. There's two Mii. Street Pass game. There's a puzzle game, and then there's a...
The RPG?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Have you met anybody with the Street Pass yet?
No, I haven't. I do like the fact that you get... There's a system in the, you know, for the console to reward you for walking around with it.
Yeah, that's pretty nifty, actually.
Yeah, so, you know, it's a Nintendo secret way of combating, I guess, obesity in America. They did it the only thing that kind of pisses me off, personally, is that it's limited to 10 coins a day, which, in this city, I can pretty much walk around the block and get that in, like, 5 minutes.
So for the uninitiated like myself, how exactly does the Street Pass system work? Like, what are the intricacies of it, and what's, like, the, like, main draw?
Well, okay, the Street Pass, as far as I know, I mean, there's different features, but for using it for the main system, it's kind of like with, I guess like a social networking thing, where like if you pass somebody else with a 3DS who has it on standby or sheet mode or whatever you want to call it, like you will initiate a transfer, so like your Miis will meet in this virtual space and you kind of interact and exchange information so that Mii then joins your system and your Mii joins the other person's system.
Oh,
and then
cool.
And then that Mii brings over certain stuff, like a puzzle piece for one of the games, or you can use them on your team in that RPG that's built into that.
Hmm.
That's on the system level. I know, for example, something like Street Fighter has battles as well, where you just kind of leave it out there, and like your players will fight each other, and I guess you earn stickers or something like that. So the system has a ton of neat little features that are cool if you have it. Like again, the pedometer gives you coins, and you know, for most of you who don't know, I think you get one coin for every 100 steps you take. So if you take 1,000 steps a day, it gives you the maximum of 10 coins per day. But you can use the coins to buy stuff in those games, and you can use it to buy stuff in actual games. So you get rewarded for walking and exercising.
That's quite interesting.
And how how does it measure your steps? Is it like a GPS or something, or
it has a speedometer. You can cheat it if you wanted to and just kind
just go on the treadmill for like 10 minutes and then like...
Well, I mean, even then you're actually walking. But I was saying, I know people, and this is something that happened with
the PokeWalker, the ceiling fans and then turn them.
Yeah. So I mean, at that point, you're already cheating yourself, and there's really no point in cheating the 3DS because, as I said, it maxes out at 1,000 per day. Well, it does, you can walk as much as you want. I think one day this week I took something like 6,000 steps. But, you know, I only got credit the 10 coins for the first 1,000 steps, which is why I'm kind of disappointed in the fact that it doesn't go beyond that. But yeah, you know, it's a lot of stuff that's built into the system that can be used for various things, and I can already see how they're gonna, like, I can see how the Street Pass will be used for Pokemon, and the speedometer will be used for Pokemon and stuff like that. So going forward, when they do start introducing, you know, other types of games, I can see how it works. You know, I can see them including AR cards with, like, Mario or Mario Kart and stuff like that.
So there's actually a pretty, like, in-depth social system that they've got built into the system, like, but it's like it's like an actual physical, like, it has a place in the world, basically, which is, I think, really cool, because that's, to me, that's features, you know, don't necessarily sell hardware, but I, you know, it's the software that sells the hardware. But to have something like that to show your buddies and to say, like, hey, like, if you get this, we could, you know, get some mutual benefits from this feature, I think that's actually kind of interesting, and I think that would be really something that would make people want to buy the system, even if the games aren't, you know, the best right now.
I can't wait to see what Pokemon does with it, because Pokemon has consistently been something, like a franchise that really pushes what the handhelds can do. So
it's potential,
Yeah.
And this is the thing that, and I've always said it about these features, because I know about some of them coming in, is that I've always thought that the Street Pass, the Spot Pass, the AR, the are more interesting features for the system than the 3D has been. Where the 3D has been front and center, and it goes back to the fact that you can, it's hard to explain 3D, but you know what it is. And it's harder to say, okay, you know, the Street Pass, you can use it to interact with your friends, in a social setting and stuff like that. So it's a hard sell, but it's a really interesting and novel feature that I hope they push forward. And I know people don't like it, but I really hope they do go forward with, like, the Mii Plaza games and actually come up with, like, a full-fledged Mii-centric RPG where you kind of get bonus points for interacting with people on the street and elsewhere.
Hopefully.
other than that, I will also touch on the, because, you know, Nintendo's always had this, always kind of been backwards with online. So you still kind of have the friend pass, the friend code system, but there's one per system. And they do kind of give you a gamer card. It's nowhere near as detailed as, like, your Xbox Live Arcade or your PSN card is. But you can tell, you know, like, you can see what your friends are playing online. They tell you your favorite games. You'll see their Miis and stuff like that. You can send, well, I don't think you can send messages yet.
Well, but for a handheld, you don't need it to do everything.
You don't need it to do everything, but, you know, they are making progress. They are taking steps forwards with the actual online. And having one uniform system is, you know, is a great beginning for them. And I still hate the fact that you have to exchange friend codes, but it's so much easier when you have to do it once.
Yeah, that's something that I think, I don't know, I never got to play the Wii online. I actually never, you know, tried to play Brawl, but I've only heard terrible things about it. And it's like, it's kind of good to see Nintendo, I almost said Microsoft, it's good to see Nintendo taking steps towards, you know, making online a more centric part of its experiences. But, I mean, I think that's something that if they were to flesh out a little bit more, could really be, like, pretty impressive. But I'm kind of bummed that they haven't really done much with that yet.
And I think, and it's always difficult, I think it's just that they want to focus. They've always kind of focused on the social aspect of gaming.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess to them, it's one or the other. And even to the other two, it's one or the other. Because as the rise in online, you see SNES, like, couch co-op games for PS3 and 360. And because there's a lot of games that don't feature, like, 4-player split screen anymore.
Right,
but they'll feature, like, 16 players online. So
yeah,
it's a give and take.
It looks like Nintendo is kind of, like you said, they're kind of like the last bastion of, see what I did there? Yeah. They're like the last bastion of, you know, local couch co-op, things like that. But I do think that, you know, you can, with the type of games that Nintendo is offering, you can definitely have, you know, like look at GoldenEye. I don't know if GoldenEye had, what's it called? I don't know if it had
local co-op.
Yeah, I don't know if it had that or like four-player split screen. But the, you know, you, I'm pretty sure that with the hardware available, you could take that game and still deliver that experience in addition to making like the hardcore fans happy and giving them their online experience, you know? So,
well, I mean, GoldenEye did have both.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So I would like to see more games do that because, I mean, they have the install base that's interested in that. And then in addition to that, if they want to start bringing those hardcore gamers over, they need to start adopting online and not have this archaic system that nobody wants to use. You know what I mean?
But yeah, I get you. And I mean, even if it's not complete online, I think something like Wii Sports and Wii Sports Resorts would have benefited from like some type of online leaderboards, just some type of system to interact with your friends because, especially when you're going for high scores and stuff, it's, you know, it's kind of nice to kind of just have that. I understand that, you know, I could see how motion would have been a problem because you have the input lag from motion and then you have the input lag from being online, which just makes for a really awkward experience in general. But something like New Super Mario Bros. Wii, I think, would have benefited from online, even if it would have been frustrating to have a bunch of 12-year-olds who dick you up instead of...
Yeah.
So how is that different from Xbox Live again? No, I'm just kidding.
Well, the fact is the Wii doesn't have any real form of voice comms.
Communicate. Yeah. So it'd be better because
you
wouldn't
play
have
with the telephone, but you would never know. So
which is an improvement.
Yeah.
There's nothing worse than getting asked if I had 12-year-old in Halo, and then having him talk trash to you.
Oh man, that used to be me. That definitely used to be me at one point in my life.
I'm so happy for the party chat system. So.
Yeah, no kidding. I don't know, like, I hope that the Wii U kind of, like, goes away from this friend code system because no one, like...
It's not going to go away from the friend code system.
But it needs to. It's like...
I mean, I have an issue with it, but I think if it has one uniform friend code, it's a nice compromise. But it's an improvement. I think Nintendo, and this is always going to be the problem, I have no issue with it. Is always going to be the family-friendly console maker, and they think about like kids, and you know they you know like you can randomly add somebody's name on Xbox Live. Granted, that's really stupid to do, but you can do it.
You can't right. you can't just add a friend code.
Yeah, but yeah, you'd have to guess it, and another person would have to guess yours as well. So I understand why they do it. It's a pain in the ass for us. But, I mean, again, it's kind of like they're looking at the whole picture and we're just kind of looking at what's easier for us. Because I'm sure you've seen, you know, parents complain about it and stuff like that. Granted, parents should be responsible.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know what's going on. But Nintendo's always kind of like in that nanny state. It's the same reason why the Wii has that health and hazard warning at the start of every time you turn on the system. And the 3DS, you know, improves it because you don't have to see it. It's actually on the main screen, so you can check it out when you want to, but it's not every time you turn on the damn system in your face.
Yeah.
So, yeah. And, you know, on the plus side, Nintendo's already ahead of the game because the Wii U has a built-in microphone in the controller, so they already have a voice system much more advanced than the Wii ever did. So, there's that. But Adrian, what have you been playing?
Well, what have I been playing lately? Oh, I've actually been playing Crysis 2 because I just got a new graphics card for my PC and it blows that game out of the water. I can run it, you know, full settings, DX11, all this other
really?
Great stuff. Yes, and it looks...
I'm kind of jealous.
It looks really good. You know, almost, you know, ultra everything except for a few things, but I get the tessellation, I get all this other great stuff, and it is so pretty. I mean, the game is actually surprisingly good, too. I actually bought it on Xbox and then sold it, you know, pretty quickly afterwards, but, I mean, it's pretty amazing that the campaign is so much improved over the old Crysis, and I think that people that... you know, gave it a harsh time for being such a, it's a consolization, you know, they're dumbing it down. I don't think that at all. I think that they definitely did what they needed to do with the second game, and it worked really well.
I think that they streamlined it, but there were some things that they, really didn't need to do.
Such like, as, just curious.
The forced tutorials is annoying. A lot of the time when you input commands into the console, I mean, I'll probably, PC games care about these things. When you input commands into the console, like changing the FOV, it doesn't save it. So you have to put it in every time you load a level.
That's annoying.
It's annoying. But other than that, they did a really good job because I was really critical of the first game because I felt that if you weren't playing it, if you weren't playing it like you would a stealth game, then you're just going to lose because...
Yeah, no, I agree. I think that they've actually addressed those console command issues that you have in the latest patch. I'm not sure, really? But I think they actually have.
Oh, yeah. I might have to try it out then.
You should give it a look. It's a great game. But other than that, yeah, I just finished up Braid. That saw the review, put it up. And
Bastion.
Bastion, not Braid. Oh, jeez. Definitely not Braid. Bastion. And, no, it's a fun, it was a good game. I definitely had some complaints with it, but I think overall it was a pretty decent title.
Yeah. Just quickly, since you mentioned it, I'm kind of curious. What is the, because you said that like, people were upset that they consoleized the game, so they dumbed it down. So you go from PC, console, and then I guess motion, so those are the three levels you can dumb down your video games to?
I guess so, yeah. I mean, the second Crysis becomes a Kinect title.
Hang on. No, there's PC, console, motion, iPhone.
No, and then Facebook.
iPhone's rock bottom, oh, yes.
Then you got Facebook. There's five tiers. You can go, it's PC, console, what'd you say? Oh, motion, iPhone, mobile, Facebook. And then Facebook. Yep. Once you're a Facebook game, you're pretty much a nobody. That's just how it goes now, I guess.
I think this is going to make an interesting article. On the
I think we should definitely post something like this on N4D and then watch everybody goes, oh, totally, you're 100% correct. Like
PC Master Race, yeah!
Yeah, oh my god, I hate
PC Master Race on there.
No, well, I mean, PC's the Master Race to gamers in general, I guess.
Yeah.
I guess it would be the Master Race if like, the five people who play can enjoy it. But other than that, I honestly don't know. But I guess that will do it for what we've been playing, and we shall head on to the news. The first thing's kind of interesting, and I'm not sure if it's been corrected, I haven't seen anything about it, is that Rage on the 360 comes with a 21 to 22 gig install.
Oh, yes. Six? No. Is it like three discs? I actually was watching the John Carmack conference where he said this, and everybody was just like, what? But, I mean... It was intense.
I was going to say, because 21 to 22 gigs is three Xbox 360 discs.
Yep.
So, that's a lot of... I'm kind of curious to see what happens if you don't install it, and how much, like, loading and streaming and what the drop-in there is.
Yeah, it's probably going to be... Have you played Gears 2 on 360? Well, yeah, it's the only way you can play, but yeah, like the draw-in or the pop-in, sorry, the pop-in is like pretty nasty on that game, and it's gonna be just like you're gonna be looking at a bunch of muddy textures, a bunch of muddy stuff. But overall, I mean, if it really bugs you, it'll be frustrating. But if you have the PC to get it, I would definitely say, you know what, just bypass that entire garbage altogether.
You know, I don't think that would be the case with Rage, because Rage is on id 5, and John Carmack, you know what he's like with his engines, and I don't know how it'll work, because apparently it's got to do something with how the megatextures that the game uses, which for those who don't know what megatextures are, basically what textures are basically what coats all of the walls and stuff, so it's what makes a wall look like a wall and a rock look like a rock. And a mega texture is basically the entire map. It's one giant texture instead of a texture for the wall and a texture for the floor and a texture for the gun you're holding. And it'd be interesting to see how long the loading times are or if there's any pop-in at all if you don't install it based on how these mega textures work.
I feel like they could probably bypass a lot of the pop-in by just making an extended load time, you know? As much as that sucks, I think that'd be the more appropriate way to do it.
Well, it didn't harm Uncharted 2.
Is that what they did?
The loading times on Uncharted 2 are quite long.
Yeah,
not that bad.
They're not terrible. I wouldn't say they're bad.
They're longer than most, though.
Yeah.
They're not Bayonetta on PS3.
Oh, that I heard that was disgusting. I played that. DNF. I have that game on 360.
I stopped playing it on PS3 because of the old time. And even really? After the patch that was supposed to improve it, I still got pissed off. Like, it's not, okay, old times are acceptable from time to time, but it would go for like 5 to 10 seconds when you went into the menu, and that drove me nuts.
Because you'd have ridiculous. To,
like, you'd pick up something, and like, it would load, and then tell you what it is, and then you'd have to, and ugh.
Don't get me started, just don't get me started.
It would be interesting to see how these work, but I probably, if I get it on 360, I won't be installing it, because I only have 30 gigs free, and I'd like to use that for, you know, things like DLC and stuff. And I know, he still has a 20 gig hard drive, so there's no way he's going to fit that on there.
Yeah, I have a 20 gig hard drive. I'm not going to be even, it's not even possible for, I think, a large majority of the people that have Xboxes. I mean, the Slim was pretty popular, but I don't think that, you know, so many people bought it that they're just going to be like, oh, 20 gigs, that's child's play.
It's a lot of space for one game.
Yeah, exactly.
You had the 4 gig.
I mean,
Xbox.
I had Fallout 3 take up 9 gigs, and that was just the DLC, and I thought that was a lot of space. You know?
Oh, yeah. No, I agree. Like, when I had my Rock Band songs back in the day, no way. I had to delete my stuff because it's like, it's just so much space. Like, when you have as many songs as I did.
And you don't notice it until it starts to add up.
Yeah, exactly.
Like a few songs are only a couple of megabytes. But it's like you add 2, and then you add a pack, and then a month later you got all these songs. Yeah, it's like Burnout, because Burnout has patches and they're like each a gig and a half a piece. So, yeah, that ate up into my space. And then the Hero map packs for like 3 were, I think, like 2.1 gigs total or something like that.
Yeah.
And then I got ODST, so I just got rid of those. And stuff like that. So, I mean, on the other hand, I'm not really going to get Rage, so...
Really? I don't know, like, I really wasn't that excited for it for a while, and then, like, I watched that, every time I watch John Carmack talk, I'm just like, oh my god, like, you know, for one, he's like, ridiculously smart, but, I mean, he just seems so passionate about what he's doing and the game itself that it kind of, like, you know, I just absorb it, you know, like, through the screen, like, osmosis myself, but it's like, I don't know, the idea of having another id game come out, like a true id game, and then having a PC that can handle it now, like, and just really pump it out, that's going to be something that's, like, I think, really alluring to a lot of people, including myself.
I'm sure a lot of people are going to be interested in it. I'm sure it's going to do well. Personally, I just don't care. It kind of looks like a rough job between Borderlands and Fallout.
See, I always had the impression of Rage that it looks really good, just not fun. I don't know, it might just be me. I just didn't think it looked like it would be fun to play.
No, it doesn't. It kind of looked like it didn't look that great. I mean, I've always seen that, like, 120-minute demo that came in on the ground and showing off, like, the boomerang and stuff like that. And
I think that's going to be something that once you get in your hands, you might change your mind. Because, I mean, if you look at Doom 3, you're just like, okay, you know, Doom. But, like, you play it, and it's like... You get really sucked into the atmosphere and things like that. I think that they're really holding up, holding back a lot of little things about the game that are going to make it different because they haven't really shown off a lot of
the past Fox out single player content.
Wait, what?
They announced that the online pass for
it's
Rage
single player content.
Are you serious?
Single player content.
Yeah.
This is a different thing entirely, but they were talking about how it locks out these kind of sewers which give you side missions, and they were talking about how you barely notice it, and I sat down and thought, well, if you're going to barely notice it, why lock it out?
Yeah, that's the thing, that because somebody told me this, and I couldn't decide if this was better or worse than Project $10, because you're locking out content, but it's content that most people wouldn't see anyhow, so I'm just thinking, like, you're cutting out a part of your game, but it's a part of your game that's so non-essential that you admit that people won't see it anyhow, but you want to charge people to access it. And I'm just like, I don't get the logic at all in any of this. But it is what it is. And I guess because they don't have an online component?
It does.
Yeah, that... It does?
Yeah, it does. He has a multiplayer and... it came out and they made a point that it wouldn't be cookie cutter and it would fit Rage and it wouldn't just be the standard TDM and CTF and stuff.
There's a multiplayer in that game?
Yes, there's a multiplayer in it.
Are you? This is news to me. Like, I am like super stoked now and totally gonna buy this game. Like 100%.
Multiplayer and co-op?
Wait, no way,
Co-op. I wouldn't be surprised if it had co-op this is id, but I don't know. I do know it has multiplayer though.
Wow.
Oh, okay. Hence the separate cooperative mode called Legends of the Wasteland, where two players work through a defined side mission, such as aforementioned Wellspring cleanup or cooperative version of Mutant Bash TV. The main difference in co-op, like increased enemy count and occasional puzzles. The team is still experimenting with how many mission totals are the exact structure. So yeah, it has co-op and multiplayer.
I am excited for this game now. Oh my god.
And if you couldn't get any better, it's Steamworks.
It's what?
Steamworks.
Oh, so it's on Steam?
So it's on Steam. It's heavily integrated with Steam. Like,
does that mean it works? Does that mean it's cross-platform between the PS3 and the PC version?
I don't think it is. I think that's going to be a Valve thing for a while. But it's going to have native Steamworks support on the PC.
Ooh, that is awesome! I'm so excited! That's just one more game to buy. I was actually doing I was at work the other day and I was like, I've got nothing better to do. I think I'll just, put a little list of all the games that I want this coming holiday season. And it came out to like $385 and I was like, that's nothing. Like, throughout the entire, the rest of the year, that is. Not for like 1 month, but.
Nah. Are you factoring in like Amazon
credit?
Prices?
Credit?
Yeah.
Well, I'm assuming that I buy every game full price, and then, like, the only promotional credit that I was thinking of was the Gears of War 3 $20 that they've got going. Go buy the game. Go pre-order it on Amazon right now. You get $20 promotional credit. That is insane. There's no reason why you should not get it right now on Amazon.
Why do we give so many people free passes on this show?
It's a gamer. It's a gamers podcast for gamers. They need to know. They need to be informed.
But actually, I am going to cut you short because we are going to do a fall preview show in like 3 weeks.
Oh, whenever this, excellent.
Whenever the start of September is, just to kind of get all those games out there. I actually, just real quick, I decided to do something different, or I'm going to try to do something different this year. I'm only going to get like 4 or 5 major games that I really want, and I'm going to save up the rest of my gaming budget for Amazon's Black Friday and Cyber Monday sales because they tend to have newer games there. And you get them for like $30-$40. So instead of just going out and buying everything new, I'll just wait. And games like Uncharted, Gears, Zelda, games that I want day one, I'll get in like stuff like maybe, like Skyrim or Rage, or there's a ton of other stuff coming out. I'll wait to see if Amazon has some type of deal on that because like actually they'd offer some new games like $30.
I totally forgot about Cyber Monday. God damn it. I don't want to wait to get, like, okay, the games that I... Okay, sorry, you're right. We'll go over that in the fall preview. Don't get me started on it now. Let's move on.
Moving on. This is probably more Daniel's department, but Valve announced a new program, like a trade-in barter system that they've included in Steam.
Yeah, so the way it used to work is if you wanted to trade TF2 items, you had to go and arrange a trade outside of the game or maybe inside the game in a server. And then you'd have to, and if you were outside of the game, you had to load the game up and maybe add them as a friend and then you do your trade. Whereas now, all you have to do is add them as a friend on Steam and you can do it in a chat window. And you can also, which I don't know how I feel about this, you can also, if you so wish, and trade TF2 items for spare copies of games and gift copies of games. So if you want, I can give you Dirt 3 in exchange for a minigun or something.
That's pretty neat.
It's a nifty idea. It builds community, and like I said, it's kind of a barter system. So if somebody has like a set of rare hats, maybe they'll get like Batman Arkham City.
Maybe.
We'll see how it works out for them. It's an awful idea. It works. It doesn't screw anybody over, really, except if you're dumb enough to take like a trade.
Yeah.
Yeah, no kidding.
Like 6 games for 1 hat or something.
I know somebody who actually benefits a lot from this because they have the entire, pretty much the entire Valve collection spare. because they already had all the games, and then Valve gave them the games again. So they had nothing to do with them, so they're just going to trade them for TF2 items now.
That's actually a pretty good point, because, you know, sometimes Steam has, like, those bundled packs, but you end up like, but I have, like, two or three of these games, do I really want to rebuy it again?
Yeah.
And now you can just be like, oh, I'll rebuy it, and then I'll give away these two games.
Or you can either give them away, or trade them for other games, or trade them for TF2 items, if that's your thing.
So, yeah, it's a nice system, which you'll see how it works out. In always sad news, THQ has announced the closure of several studios this week.
Which one were those?
Offhand, the only one I know of that I'm really disappointed about is the studio behind The Blob, which I think is Viewfront.
Oh, The Blob was actually really good stuff. I'm surprised that they decided to close that.
Which is really kind of curious, because the first The Blob did really well. It's one of the few million, well, not few, it's a million set on the Wii. So it did well enough, and it got a sequel, but,
apparently,
yeah.
The sequel didn't sell.
I guess the second one didn't sell that
well. I don't think it's about sales, because they shut down Chaos, and Chaos managed to ship 2 million copies of Homefront.
But Homefront was terrible.
But it doesn't, I don't think that matters to THQ, they just want sales.
That's true.
Well, I think it's that, and maybe it's just, like, maybe the time and investment wasn't worth it, because they are continuing the Homefront thing, so they value the brand, but maybe it was a poorly managed studio. And, you know, at the end of the day, when, you know, a lot of companies put stuff on the chopping block just because they need to get their bottom line intact, and getting rid of 200 people's salary,
but
no matter
THQ has made a lot of layoffs recently, and I mean a lot of them. The studio that was responsible for Kill Team got shuttered just before it came out. There was a very small amount of people that got laid off from Volition. They closed down Chaos, you know.
They're no longer making Red Faction games.
Yeah, they're no longer making Red Faction games, which is a bit disappointing.
I don't know, I feel like THQ is kind of like reaping what it sowed, because a lot of the games that they were publishing were, you know, mediocre, and they're kind of like that in between like the really bad games and like the mediocre games, and the great games. So, I mean, when the market gets really competitive and they're deciding to, you know, release these games like Homefront, they're not really gonna do that well, and there isn't a whole lot of potential for those franchises, like, when the big heavy hitters come out again. I think the reason that a lot of people bought Homefront was because they wanted another Call of Duty, and they were getting sick of Black Ops or whatever, you know? So, I don't know, it's just weird to think that, you know,
it's kind of curious, because somebody made the argument to me this week in the opposite direction, that the reason stuff like Crysis 2 and Killzone 3 didn't sell so well is because people didn't want any more shooters after Black Ops. So,
well, I think that, I don't know, I think that Killzone is one of those games that appeals to, like, a surprisingly not humongous fan base. You know, as much as I do like Killzone, I mean, I do think that the second game was, like, just, it had this really, really awkward motion that just, like, I don't know if you ever played it, but, like, it felt like you had a big sack of rice on your back, and you were trying to, like, move around against that. So it's like, I don't think that a lot of people that, you know, play Call of Duty really dig that game because of that exact reason. So.
Okay. And I'll touch on this in a bit. But we're going to talk about MPDs, but not really detailed numbers. But it's something I wanted to mention, and it's something I've noticed. And I always hate beating up on Sony, because I seem to do it often. But there are reasons for it. This year alone, Sony has released DC Universe Online, It'll Begin at 2, Killzone 3, Heroes on the Move, MotorStorm, Infamous 2, and I'm sure I'm missing one or two games in the first 6 months of the year. Nintendo has released Wii Play Motion, Mario Sports Mix. Microsoft has released nothing to my knowledge.
In the last one?
This year.
This year?
There was a Kinect games. Some Kinect games, I think, and that was it.
Didn't Dance Central 2 come out?
No, Dance Central 2 is a fall title.
Oh. shows how much I know about Kinect right now.
And the fact that Sony has been unable to outsell either the Wii or the 360 this year, at least in the States, I think it's really telling of the strength of the Sony brand as far as their exclusive first-party lineup goes. And it's something I've always made note of, but, you know, people always thought it's just me beating up on Sony. But the fact is, they've released six major exclusives. Granted, I think their bigger franchises are Uncharted and Gran Turismo.
I don't know. What? It's weird because I've had this argument with so many of my friends that are, you know, PlayStation fanboys, and I'm more of a moderate now, you know, I like to be basically try and play the field as much as I can, but when it comes to the franchises that Sony launches that are all exclusives, a lot of them are, they're quality stuff, you know, you got Resistance, Killzone, Gran Turismo, God of War, etc., etc., but a lot of them just don't really do as well as the big multi-platform titles or the few juggernauts that Microsoft has on its side. I mean, you look at a Gears of War game and then you look at a Halo game, and those games just routinely destroy games like Killzone and Resistance. So it's like, do you want a number of exclusives that kind of appeal to a wide variety of people, or do you want those two really, really, like, everybody gets super stoked for them the second they're announced kind of games?
Well, I think it depends. There's two perspectives from it. From a gamer's point of view, Sony's method is better because Microsoft may have two huge franchises, but that's two franchises. Whereas Sony, if you're a fan of theirs, you have an option to make a dozen different major franchises.
Yeah, yeah.
So I admittedly really like Halo, but I just wish they had more. I haven't, the only reason I've been buying console games is, like, the only console games I've bought this year are, what is it? Bulletstorm, which was a multiplat, and I was only bought it because I knew the PC version would be crap. L.A. Noire, because there was no PC version, and...
Yet.
Well, not yet. And Red Faction Armageddon, because I knew my friends would get it, and they have 360s. I mean, everything else I've just bought on PC.
Well, yeah, it's just a point it's something I noticed this week because, like, Infamous just came out. And the fact is, Nintendo and Microsoft really have been resting on nothing this year. And they've been cruising by. Like, yes, their sales kind of wax and wane, but they still sell decently. And Sony has been putting in all the effort. They've been releasing a major game almost every month, sometimes two a month. And what are they seeing for it? And again, this only extends to the States. In Europe and Japan, Sony does much better, but again, I don't think it's on the strength of their exclusive first-party IPs. And this goes back to an article I wrote many, many weeks ago, where I think Sony, at this point, needs to just buckle down and focus on making two or three of their games major, major events. As Adrian pointed out, Halo and Gears, those are huge events when they're announced. With Nintendo, it's Mario, Pokemon, and Zelda. Metroid's a huge event, but it never sells as well as those three. With Sony, everything's kind of treated as the next mega event where nothing feels special or standout-ish. Twisted Metal was delayed this year, as we mentioned, 2 weeks ago, and it doesn't seem like it takes away anything from Sony's lineup, nor does it seem like it adds anything next year, if that makes any sense.
Yeah. It does. I consistently feel like Sony has these exclusives, and they, you know, they make a little big up, you know, here comes Killzone 3, right? And then maybe, you know, a fair amount of people buy it, but it's never it's not like Uncharted. I would say that Uncharted is probably Sony's biggest franchise right now and has the biggest allure to the widest variety of people, I think, personally. And, for me, you know, not even owning a PS3, I know when that game is coming out. I know when Part of 3 is going to be releasing, and that kind of makes me, you know, that they're basically really investing in that franchise, and that kind of appeals more to me as a gamer than it does to see, like, a bunch of little ones, like, being released along the way, because I guess it has, like you were saying, as a gamer, it's good to have a wide spectrum, you know, because you want to appeal to as many people as you can. But when you're really, really trying to connect with that core audience, like, that's the way to go. Like, make that big game and make it sell. Just market the shit out of it so that everybody knows about it.
Yeah,
they'll buy it, basically.
And I think they need to pick a horse and stand behind it. It might not always work out for them, but they need to, you know, pick a horse, and I think Uncharted and Gran Turismo are their two best bets.
Yeah, definitely.
And God of War, but I don't hate Kratos as a character personally. But we'll return to the NPD numbers in just a second. Nintendo announced a Red 3DS for September, I think September 9th, with Star Fox 3D.
I'll tell you what. I fucking want that Red 3DS. I want it. And that, like I said on Twitter, all Nintendo have to do now is release one game, and I will buy a 3DS just for it, because it's £100. I will go and buy a 3DS for that one game.
And what's that one game?
Well, I don't know what that one game will be. It could be Mario Kart, because I really like the Mario Kart games. So, come Christmas, I'll buy a 3DS for Mario Kart. There you go.
I was going to point out the fact
that... You've won me over, Nintendo.
I was going to point out the fact that Nintendo has dropped the price of the system $80, and they've announced a new color, which are usually two things you do when you want to boost sales. They have yet to really kind of get on the ball when they need the games to come into that at some point. And I don't know if any of you have seen, they have new North American commercials, which are focused on that, just that. They have a commercial that's focused on Zelda, Star Fox, Mario Land 3DS, or Super Mario 3D Land, which I hate the name of, and Mario Kart 7.
Really? Is that his name?
Yes.
Who in Nintendo thought, oh yes, that sounds very good, Super Mario 3D Land.
3D Land.
I think it was kind of, I would have avoided the Land name, but I guess they wanted to go back to it because it's kind of the handheld Mario franchise. But you can't say Super Mario Land 3D because it either assumes it's the third game.
That's why you stop putting 3D in the name, because I bought a 3DS, I know it does 3D because it, you know, it says 3D on the side, it says 3DS every time I put a game in, you don't need to tell me the game is 3D in 3D on the case when I buy it.
But it's in the land that's 3D, it's different, it's the land itself is three-dimensional! It's amazing!
It's an awful name, and I hate the fact that they're going with Mario Kart 7.
And they've done it with every handheld, and I hate, well, every handheld since the DS, well, okay, they haven't done it. They did it with the N64, they did it with the SNES, because they named everything Super this. They did it with the DS, because it was Super Mario 64 DS.
I mean, they did it. That one's different because, again, it's because it's a remake. So, you know, they put the DS in. But yeah, they did it with the Wii because I've joked, and again, this is from NPD. It's like I believe there are 8 Wii games that have sold over 5 million in the States alone, and all of them but 2 have Wii in the title at some point. So there's that. So yeah, they do it, but I'm kind of curious what they're gonna do, if it's gonna be like Super Mario U. So
the third-party publishers follow suit.
Third-party publishers aren't that creative. It's most of them. But yeah, Red 3DS comes out in September with Star Fox 64 3DS, which again is another awful name to say. Actually, it's a terrible thing to just be a Nintendo game this year with naming if you're on Skyward Sword. Because I think, what is it, Kirby's Return to Dreamland or something like that?
It's not a terrible name.
It's not a bad name, but I think they just kind of wanted to, you know, make the Kirby, Donkey Kong Country Returns, and then had new Super Mario Brothers. So they want that new one returns to kind of appeal to that nostalgia crowd. And finally, I guess the biggest news to come out this week, at least as far as the internet reaction, is a new Counter-Strike has been announced for PSN, Xbox Live Arcade, and PC for early 2012. And my favorite comment about this whole ordeal was somebody said, even more proof that Valve doesn't know how to count to 3.
Yeah. I think Valve's excuse this time around is they're not actually developing it as such. Yeah, they're doing it in cooperation with a company called Hidden Path, who made Defense Grid. And they also helped out with putting Steamworks into Counter-Strike Source. But yeah, it's another Counter-Strike game. I can't see what they're going to do with the franchise other than make it Call of Duty. It's going to be interesting to play it because it's going to be Eurogamer and I'm going to be there. So I suppose you'd have to look out for what I have to say about it comes the end of September. It's very surprising, though, that they just say, yeah, Counter-Strike, another one.
Why is that surprising?
Because, well, the last time they did a Counter-Strike game, they just ported Counter-Strike 1.6 to the Source engine. And that was it. You know? And yeah. it's a game that everybody seems to be fine with already, and I don't see how they can... I don't know. And it's being put on the console, which is even weirder. It just doesn't sound right. I know Counter-Strike 1.6 was on the original Xbox, but it just doesn't sound right to me.
No, it wasn't, actually. That was...
It was?
No, it was Condition Zero. That's what it was.
Was it?
It wasn't 1.6.
Oh, well, it was... Yeah, it was still on the original Xbox.
Yeah.
It just doesn't sound right to me. It's not a... I just don't think it's a console franchise. Saying that, neither was Call of Duty.
Yes. I mean, all Call of Duty's have been on consoles, but...
Not all of them. One has, but... Call of Duty got its massive following from PC.
Well, it's got its massive following from Modern Warfare. The first one.
That's true, I guess.
It might have been a brand on the PC, but it's like saying Grand Theft Auto started
actually,
on the PC.
Counter-Strike Go, I'm calling it Counter-Strike Go. It's gonna be on Xbox Live and PSN, I think they mentioned, which is gonna be even weirder.
I think they also said they're making it with a console focus, so going back to our hierarchy of video game difficulties, that would be number two on the peg. So, you know, PC gamers can start complaining now.
Great.
So, yeah.
It's just strange for Valve to say, yeah, new Counter-Strike, and in typical Valve fashion, they announced a game without a trailer, so it's hard to get excited about it.
Isn't there a trailer out for it now, or am I mistaken?
The only trailer I've seen is fake, and it's obviously fake.
It's 100% fake and gay. Now, the one thing that I don't know, I was actually talking with my friend about this morning. I actually think that based on the fact that it's going to be an Xbox Live arcade game, it's really just going to be kind of like, I can't get excited for it because I feel like it's just going to be Source, maybe with like some new, rebalancing, you know, some nice little Source engine updates and things like that. I don't think they're going to really try and like redo the formula that made Counter-Strike so popular to begin with. So, I mean, I'm already kind of sick off that game anyway, so.
We never know. We'll have to find out at the end of September or if anyone has to PAX Prime earlier than that.
I don't know. I love Valve, but I do think that, you know, they're just kind of like, everybody's like, okay, we really want to see Half-Life 3, and they're just kind of like, no, not yet, you know. It's starting to get on my nerves, you know what I mean?
It's the greatest, I think the greatest vaporware of this generation is going to be Final Fantasy Versus 13, which I think is becoming the Final Fantasy equivalent of Duke Nukem Forever.
You think so?
It's been announced for, 5 years now? And
it hasn't
Square's
been
announced.
I don't think... I thought you were talking about Episode 3. Sorry.
No. I'm talking about Final Fantasy Versus 13. It was announced for Final Fantasy 13 back at E3 2006, wasn't it?
This is Square Enix, the company that likes announcing games and not releasing them.
Yeah, and they're not showing it at Tokyo Game Show, which means the next time we'll see it, it's most likely next year at some point, which I would assume is like E3. The fact that they have announced and are going to release Final Fantasy 13 too before Final Fantasy Versus 13 just makes me think we won't really hear much about it. Anything else to add before we touch on NPDs?
Not really.
Okay.
Let's just move on from Global Offensive, please.
It's just the fact that the Valve have said, yeah, new Counter-Strike game, but there's no trailer.
Yeah, that's the thing. That's pretty
frustrating. It's hard to get excited about something with no trailer, and they did it for Dota 2, and we still don't have a trailer for that game. And it's debuting in 2 weeks, if that.
Nah. So, we don't usually talk about... Well, I mean, we'll mention NPDs, but we don't really go into depths about the sales because I don't think any of us have that background. I just wanted to point out that we got NPD numbers this week, and this is the lowest selling month of this generation. It's the lowest selling month of video games since, I believe, October 2006, which would have been the official start of this generation. The next month with the Wii and the PS3 coming out after that. Yeah. And I think it's starting to show that I think this generation is kind of going on in the truth. I realize that it's the summer and the slow months in general.
Yeah.
But I think that we're just kind of, you know, like, software sales are down in general. The best-selling game of the month is NCAA. I don't like the new MPD formats because it imputes everything. So, like, NCAA football is the best-selling game, but it was on two platforms. So, you know, like, it could have sold, like, 400,000 on one.
That sounds like such measly numbers today. I don't know why. Like, at one point, that would have been probably pretty impressive. But right now, we're just like, half a million?
Yeah,
garbage.
I know, and it's kind of weird. But it's inflation of this generation where a lot of games just... it's kind of weird. It's the same thing I've had discussions with people where, like, 2 or 3 million sellers are no longer impressive. They're just kind of like, oh, okay, so it did decent. And I think part of that, you know, inflation comes from the fact that we see Call of Duty do 20, 25 million. We saw, like, GTA 4 did 20 million. Halo 3 did 14 million. Wii Fit does, like, 25 million. Mario Kart Wii's at 27 million. And those kind of stick out, but those are more the exception than the norm. But it does kind of make the end seem different.
Yeah.
I mean, when you think Just Dance 2 crossed this month, it crossed 5 million in the US alone.
Yeah,
then you just kind of realize how, you know, like, the low range has kind of been moved upwards and is now kind of like a medium range. It's like range. So yeah, you know, like, nothing really did remarkably, except for, I have to say, new Super Mario Bros. DS charted in the top 9, and it's over 90,000 units sold.
DS games have a habit of doing that, though, don't they? Like, they'll disappear for the longest amount of times, and then boom, they're in the top 10 again.
Yeah, Nintendo has this, they have this thing with games where they can create long tails. I don't know what it is that they do specifically or differently than anybody else.
I think it's just Nintendo.
It is. I mean, at some points it is. It's like, oh, you know, like, you get a new DS, you get a new Wii, and you kind of know who Mario is, so you'll go with the Mario game and stuff like that. But, I mean, it should, you know, it should be similar with Halo or Call of Duty or Gears, is that you get a new 360 or you get a new PS3 and you buy, well, I guess you wouldn't get Halo and Gears for the PS3, but it should, you know, like, Halo and Gears should tie that type of tail. They don't, because they usually sell, like, really well the first month, and then they just kind of drop off the second. And by the third or fourth, you don't see them anymore.
Yeah.
And I've, you know, it's kind of, I'm still surprised that Call of Duty has such a long tail, where it still charts 9 months after the fact, because it's so, you would think it's so front-loaded, because it does break records when it comes out, but then it continues to sell remarkably well.
Yeah, that has always surprised me.
Yeah. And I think Call of Duty, I think each Call of Duty would sell better if they didn't cut off its own tail by having a game every year. Which is one of the things I think one of the reasons Nintendo games do so as well, is because there is no other new Super Mario Bros. DS 2. So you always buy that one game.
Yeah.
The difference with Call of Duty, though, is, like, it's an incredibly big franchise and an incredibly loyal following, loyal to the point where they will buy 4 $15 map packs, even though they're knowing that there's another one coming in less than 6 months. Well, in fact, by the time the last one releases for Black Ops, Modern Warfare 3 will only be, what, a month away, maybe? Maybe 2 months?
Yeah, but
it's ridiculous.
You know, but you see, that's I think that's what's so, that's surprising about it. As you said, it has a loyal following, and you'll have people who will buy Modern Warfare 3 first day, first week, first month. And that, you know, usually for most of these big games, that's it. It's like you get those people. But somehow Call of Duty continues to do it 6 months later, 9 months later, 10 months later. And then it goes up to 11 months, and then, like, the next one comes out, and that's when you cut off the tail. But the fact that it continues to do that has always kind of been impressive because, again, it's a game that sells like 5 million first week. And that's impressive. But the fact that we're, 9 months outside of Black Ops and it's the number 3 best-selling game of July 2011 is impressive all on its own. That said, Call of Duty is impressive. Everything else is kind of meh. Like, again, well, not to pick on Sony, but like Infamous 2 came out last year. That's off the top 10. Ocarina of Time is actually off the top 10. Though, from my understanding, Ocarina of Time is actually, and this is why I hate the new MPD, Ocarina of Time would be in the top 10 if it was based on individual queues, which is always why I hate when people see a top 10 and they're like, bomber, because, it's hard, you know, like with combined sales, your multi-platform, it always favors a multi-platform game.
Yeah.
So, it's very difficult for a single platform SKU to
especially
there.
One that's on a niche platform like the 3DS.
Yeah. And, you know, it's actually, you know, it's not bad. I think it sold, has sold with like 30% of the 3DSs so far, which is a decent attach ratio. But yeah, 3DS software has just kind of been bad across the board. As I said, PS3, they've had like 6 major games. None of them are in the top 10. There were only 8 games this month that crossed over 100,000 units sold, which is down from 19 last year. As a whole, the industry's down 26% year over year. 360's down 38%, Wii's down 25%, PS3's down 31%. It's a really, it's just not an industry that's really in a healthy condition. And again, I know it's the summer months, so it's really difficult to say, but I think it also shows that the industry needs to kind of cater to the summer audience, because you can't say, oh, we'll just cater to you like 9 months out of the year, the other 3 you can spend for yourself, because people do lose interest in that time. Like, we won't.
Yeah.
Hopefully.
Well, I mean, I haven't really been playing much this summer because there's not much out, but it's not like I'm not going to buy any fall games now.
That's true.
So there's that. Yeah, I just wanted to point it out. Again, it's always kind of like it's a confirmation bias, because you want to find evidence that supports your theories, and I do think this generation is going on too long, because, you know, like right now, routinely, it would be the 5-year mark for all of these systems, 6-year mark for the 360, and that's routinely when they would start getting phased out. The Wii's starting to get, well, okay, the Wii's phased out, but the successor isn't out yet. But there's no signs of a PS4 or an Xbox Next anywhere within the next 18 months, which means we're going to, especially if you're Sony, going to suffer through another 18 months of sluggish sales. And I think it's going to start hurting software and new IPs, though we're not getting many this year.
I think this generation is almost on its way out. I don't know like what the next step is for everybody, but I do think that considering things are, you know, people are starting to put games on 3 discs now, shooters no less, and it just feels like, you know, the old tech is really beginning to affect developers' ability to be innovative and, you know, kind of bring new stuff to the table. So
I was gonna say, I've always seen that as an opposite, because most of the innovations usually come from a restriction of technology.
Oh no, absolutely. I do agree. But I think that especially, I know this is gonna probably sound like extremely PC fanboyish, but after seeing, you know, what DX11 can do to games and seeing how it's finally becoming something that's kind of becoming somewhat reminiscent of mainstream, you know, hipster kitty comes in now. But I do think that it's we're moving towards that, like, really, really high fidelity, like, even higher than, like, what we've come to understand from HD now. And the fact that most games that are running on 360 and PS3 aren't running at true 1080p when you do put them at 1080p, I know, like, Halo runs at, like, this, like, really bastardized, like, resolution.
Yeah, a lot of games do. So does Call of Duty, which I always find funny because it's, like, one of the games people use as a great example of next-gen, but it's not actually HD.
Exactly, and it's, like, and I think that that's part, I mean, a lot of the stuff that we see on our current generation of consoles now is it's just smoke and mirrors. I mean, you're meant to believe that, like, it's amazing what they've done with a gig of RAM, you know, 3 cores that are pretty old, and a graphics card that I don't even know, you know, what the stats are on it, but it's incredible to think that, you know, the fact that, like you said, we've had so much adversity and so much trouble fitting all this stuff onto this old aging hardware that we've had to make these strides forward. But I think it's time that we kind of like take off those boundaries again and say, all right, now it's time to do it all over again and see what we can accomplish this time. Because yeah, I do think that it's getting a little bit intense.
It's gotten to a point where games aren't looking any better than they used to. Games aren't playing any better than they used to. We're not getting any new IPs.
And I will just say that I don't think that the next generation is going to be a huge leap forward.
It won't be a huge leap forward, but it'll be a leap nonetheless, and one that's actually needed.
Go ahead.
Go on.
Okay. all right. Anyway, I do think that graphically it won't be. I think on consoles we're gonna be like, oh, so this is what real HD looks like. But I think that the big thing is that we're gonna see, especially with like the rumors of everything going like super digital. I think that it's going to be a big step forward for gaming in general, and just saying, here are these new options, you know? And the fact that tech has advanced so far, and if you recall correctly, the Xbox 360 wasn't quite bleeding edge when it came out, but it was pretty cutting edge tech when it released, you know, definitely delivered experiences that were equal to what was being delivered on PCs at the time. So now that like RAM is super cheap, SSDs are becoming more popular, things like that, I think that we're probably going to see an Xbox come out. I don't know if it'll have a solid state, but it'll definitely have, you know, like maybe 16 gigs of RAM. I'm serious. Maybe 16 gigs
of RAM. I don't think that's going to happen.
But stuff like that, you know, we're going to have like a really, really great processor, good graphics card.
I mean, I was also going to point out, and this is something that I've learned recently, is that the amount of RAM needed for a console isn't the same amount needed for a PC because you don't have to run an operating system.
Well, yeah.
So it's...
Right.
So yeah, this is why, you know.
Well, even if they just double the amount that's in the consoles at the moment to 1 gig, then that's it. The developers will have nothing to complain about.
Well, I mean, developers will always have something to complain about because isn't it? Well, I think it's Epic who wants like 8 gigs of RAM for the next set of consoles.
And I think that, to be honest, it would be cost effective to do that because you can get RAM is so cheap now, and I mean, if you think about it.
Well, again, it's a different type of RAM that they use for consoles compared to what most people use for their home PCs.
Yeah, but I think that you can still develop RAM that's similar to that RAM to make it mass producible and to make it so that it works in the console framework, you know, whether it's size constraints or anything like that.
Yeah.
The hardware itself isn't that expensive anymore. If it was like a solid state, I'd be like, okay, maybe, you know, we're not going to see like 300 gig solid states or anything like that. But to see that tech is, you know, finally becoming a little bit more affordable, I feel like the consoles will be able to take advantage of that and really future-proof themselves a lot more. And then once DX11 like goes widespread, then it's going to be a pretty big leap in terms of what we can accomplish with our games visually and perhaps audio-aurally. I think aurally is the word. But I'm going to look that up. Aurally. Yes.
It's auditorial. But I was going to say that it's – and again, I guess this is – you know, because, like, what would you use as the benchmark for the best-looking PC game at the moment?
The best-looking PC game? I definitely would have to say that Crysis 2 is up there. Like, honestly, once you max that game out, it looks incredible. Like, I can definitely send you a screenshot that I've taken. It looks unbelievably good.
Okay. I was going to say, I think a lot of, you know, people would also point out to Battlefield 3, even though that's not out yet.
Right, no, Battlefield 3 looks great. I can tell you that much.
But I think it looks great, but I think to the average person, it doesn't look worlds different than, let's say, when we went from the N64 and PS1 to the PS2 and the GameCube, or from, you know, we had the HD from the GameCube, Xbox, and PS2 to the 360 and the PS3. Again, I can be wrong, but I mean, again, this is what Peter Moore said as well, is that next gen, you're going to get a boost in graphics, of course, but that won't be the main point. And I don't see Sony or Microsoft redoing what they did this generation by offering a $400 or $500 system, because that's not...
I agree with you, but I don't think we'll see a $400 system. I think that the economy is too unstable right now, that it would be kind of foolhardy to release a $400, you know, recreational system.
It was foolhardy 5 years ago.
Yeah, but that was 5 years ago when the economy didn't suck as much as it does now. I mean, it was still
beginning to... Oh, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah,
it was
exactly.
Stupid idea 5 years ago. It's going to be even worse today.
But there are still people that would buy it then. I don't think that there's that many people anymore that would spend that much money on a console. I think that the max we're going to see is like $350 at a launch price.
Yeah, $350 or so. But I think that also limits the amount of power they can use. But I also think that they're going to try... Because, I mean... Microsoft gained more success with the Launcher Kinect than they did with any type of HD game.
Mm-hmm.
Nintendo didn't even have to go HD this generation. So, you know, going forward, I think they're going to look at that and see that maybe we don't have to invest as much into this technology, and maybe we'll come up with some other hook for our console. I mean, Nintendo already has their hook. Maybe Microsoft, I assume going forward that the next Xbox is going to have some type of Kinect functionality built in.
To be perfectly honest, I think part of the reason that Kinect did so well, and I think that it's probably exactly the same for a lot of people as the Wii was, is because it was on Oprah, and it was, you know,
they had a
huge hype machine going for that tech, and it's just like the Wii. If people bought it, they tried it out, and they were like, eh. And I bet you money that, like, the attach rate for the Kinect is ultra low. I think it is, like, maybe, like, sub, like, 1.8, if you ask. Like, I mean, compared to the Xbox or the PS3, where it's, like, I think 3.7 right now for the amount of games per console. And I really don't think people buy the Kinect and then keep buying games for it. I think they go, oh, wow, we'll have a game night every week, and then, like... Oh, I can't make it this week. Oh, Jimmy's out, you know, playing soccer. You know, I definitely think that it's just like, you know, what the Wii suffered from, and that people just stopped playing it.
To be fair to the Kinect, well, not to be fair, there hasn't actually been any type of software released outside of the initial. I'm not saying but there hasn't really been many. It hasn't been a constant stream of games. So the fact is, most people kind of picked up their own software, and there's been nothing else for them to buy. Not to say that they, you know, that they would have bought it, but... I think it's disingenuous to disqualify those type of people because, I mean, there's evidence either way. I mean, they, you know, people always say, you know, people bought the Wii and stopped playing it, but the fact of the matter is when there's 10, 20 million sellers on your system, somebody's buying those games. And the fact is the Wii has sold, what is it, somewhere south of 800 million pieces of software. Still begs to the fact that somebody's playing the system. And I think Kinect would have done the same thing if you had a more steady stream of games. I think going forward, what they need to do is marry that concept and have something like Kinect built into the system, but still kind of have it controlled centric, so you kind of cater to both groups and you can get all of those games out.
Oh, I agree. I think that the amount of games on the Kinect right now is pitiful. That's probably part of the problem, absolutely.
Well, it's better than the Move, but...
Oh my god.
It's probably 360 games right now.
Yeah, which is kind of... I don't know, that'll change in the fall, but I hate... We've talked about this before, but I hate that lull in the summer. I despise it.
Well, I mean, okay, and this is something that I guess you can end on because we're already over the hour and 10-minute mark, is the fact that even this fall, Microsoft has two major exclusive titles, I think. There's Gears and there's Forza 4.
Hey, don't forget, there's that Disneyland Kinect game. That's amazing.
Oh, yeah. Well, I would have counted the Disneyland Kinect games because I think to most of us, that wasn't me. But yes, the Disneyland Kinect and even the Sesame Street game, I think would be, okay, so four major exclusive titles. What do they have going into next year?
Absolutely nothing. Oh, Halo 4.
Halo 4. That's it for an entire year. They're starting to get Nintendo 64 type levels of first party support here.
Okay, well Mass Effect 3 isn't. I don't think that's.
It's not exclusive.
Yeah.
No. And they don't get me wrong. There's a ton of this. You know, there's Skyrim, there's Rage, there's Call of Duty, there's Mass Effect 3, there's BioShock Infinite. There's games coming out for it. But at the end of the day, it's
not
games that,
games that are going to make people buy Xboxes for, right?
Yeah, it's games you buy if you have an Xbox.
Right.
And I think Microsoft hasn't done anything to remedy the fact that they have a really weak first party lineup.
I agree with you. I think that they need to, you know, there needs to be more, but I think at this point, like, Microsoft is probably pretty satisfied with its, you know, profit margin for the Xbox and probably doesn't really, like, care too much about, you know, really, really encouraging new adopters, especially with, you know, the Kinect insurgency that they had in the beginning.
And that's honestly why I think that the next generation is gonna, you know, they're gonna have some type of Kinect built in, because at the end of the day, they have had more success with the 360 with the Entre the Sim and Kinect last year than they did the prior 5 years.
Yep.
So it makes sense if you're a business that this is profitable for us, this is what's sudden, why would we go back to this method of working, you know, of trying to sell the system, which is why I also don't expect any huge graphical heat from the three consoles, because financially, it didn't work out for Sony and Microsoft this generation. They released HD consoles, they, you know, state of the art. Sony's lost money for 5 years. Microsoft has lost money for 4.5.
Yeah. It's just, again, it's all just coming to that boiling point where they're just like, you know what, like, this, it's it. That's we've, I mean, if you think about it, how many games have gone through an entire franchise's worth of sequels in this generation? Mass Effect will be one franchise. Gears of War.
Uncharted.
Uncharted, thank you.
Killzone, Resistance.
Yep.
Ratchet and Clank.
Yep.
Halo's gone. Wait, Halo.
No, Halo started on Xbox.
No, but I'm talking about this. Halo 4 would be the fifth Halo game this generation, or fourth?
I think it's fourth. Halo 3, ODST, Reach. Yeah, at least. No, it'll be the
Wars.
Four.
Halo Wars.
Yeah.
Are we talking Bungie Halos? Because I only consider Bungie Halos to be.
Well, we haven't. But okay, but Halo 4 isn't Bungie. But yeah, I think a whole, you know, like a whole generation. I think three sequels is pushing it. But you know, BioShock would be on three now.
Saints Row.
Even Saints Row.
God.
So yeah, there's a ton of trilogies this generation.
Assassin's Creed
is on his fourth one.
But I mean, like, think about it. Like, a lot of those games, you know, that didn't really happen before this generation of consoles came around, and that's impressive. And at the same time, I feel like now that those trilogies and those franchises are wrapping up, or at least we think they're wrapping up, I think that it's time that we really did. I mention Gears of War anyway. Those are all wrapping up. Those big, you know, mega hits are just kind of like coming to their conclusions. And I feel like the next franchises that will start should not start on Xbox 360 and PS3. And I don't think that developers want to like invest in a franchise and then have it on a console that may not be around for the next 2 years or in 2 years.
It's not even so much about invested. It's the fact that it becomes harder and harder to sell a new franchise at the end of the generation. Because as you pointed out, like, we've had a lot of great franchises emerge this generation, and you'll get people who are fans of those, and then when the sequel comes out to those, you'll pick that up. So, you know, like this year, you have Assassin's Creed, you have a new, you know, you have a new Gears, you have a new Uncharted, you have a Halo Remake. So who's gonna pick up, like, Bulletstorm is an example, or Homefront, or something like that. When you have, like, you know, oh, Call of Duty is just around the corner, I can wait.
Right.
So, you know, it's a huge problem, and I think, you know, the first generation is easy, you know, like games like Earth, Planet, and Dead Rising became huge hits because there was nothing else, so you picked them up and you had fun with them, you checked them out. If they had drawn, like, 2 or 3 years later, I don't think they would have, like, look how well Dead Rising 2 and Earth, Planet 2 did. They didn't.
But to be fair, Lost Planet 2 was a terrible game, and Dead Rising 2 didn't really capitalize on the potential that it had.
It didn't fix what they should have fixed about Dead Rising.
Yeah, and I think that
the fact that they're both Capcom franchises is also not a good thing.
Oh, yeah. hate of Capcom.
Yeah, there's a Red Steel is another example of that. But yeah, there's a ton of games that happens to. But yeah, I think that's your do a wrap for this week. Unless we have anything else to talk about.
Go buy the GTX 560 Ti and play Crysis 2 on DX11 because it is a spectacle. Go earn $260.
I wasn't aware that anybody played games on PC anymore.
Huh?
Neither the PC, neither the fireplace.
I wasn't aware that anybody played games on PC. Can you play games on PC? Oh, you mean one of those Facebook games, don't you?
I do, I do. I'm talking about Farmville and HD, baby. You know about it.
Google Fest has games now too.
Yep, that is a topic for a different day because I do not want to talk about.
Now I cannot play games on a service I don't like.
So yes, for social gaming, for Capcom, for MPDs, for everything else you discussed this week, and for Adrian, Daniel, Dylan, and myself, this has been Dual World in episode 43.
Bye.
See ya.
Mm-hmm.